The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
You're listening to America Speaks Out on the Flypod.com media network. From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk. Regardless of how you're listening, we're glad to have you joining us. When you have a few minutes, take time to browse around our media website, www.theflypod.com. We have a nationwide network of show hosts, and we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. When it comes to media, we are what's next. My guests today are Heather Crossing and Erin Tuttle. These two ladies are political and school curriculum activists and are exceptionally concerned about the many changes that are taking place across America relating to standardized testing, and specifically a standardized test called Common Core, or also known as the Common Core Initiative. Heather, Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
Now, I don't know. My first question, generally speaking, is to give you ladies an opportunity to talk a little bit about yourselves and how you got interested. And from our brief discussion, it seems that you have a common background. So whichever one of you ladies would like to give us a little bit of a background as far as how it is you got involved in this activity.
Well, I'll go first. I was aware that there's been an initiative for a federal takeover of education at play for decades. The last time it reared its ugly head was during the Clinton administration. And you may recall they released national history standards that were so politically incorrect that even our U.S. Senate voted 99-1 on a resolution condemning their content. At that time, I was a young staffer working for Congressman Dan Burton, both in Washington, D.C. and back here in Indiana. I then went on to retire and have a family, raising my four children. And it wasn't until last fall, when my children returned to school, I didn't realize that my state had signed on to something known as the Common Core Initiative. Our children returned to school and were greeted with what I'll call a fuzzy math book. If you haven't had the pleasure of experiencing fuzzy math, it's a remake of the new math that was popular in the 60s and quite a failure. When parents became upset at our school, the principal called the publisher, the saleswoman for the publishing company, who came in and explained how lucky we were that we had one of the very first Common Core aligned textbooks. When parents weren't buying the job that was being sold to us, finally, the principal said in exasperation, "Look, I know parents don't like this type of math because it's not the way any of us were taught math, but we have to teach it this way because this was how it will be on the new PARC assessment." And that is the federally funded test that will go into effect in 2014 and will occur four times a year.
How many states are involved in this?
To date, 45 states have signed on to the Common Core Initiative, and that's adopting the Common Core state standards, which have been released for both math and English language arts. And there are two federally funded tests, the SBAC and the PARC. Some states are taking one and others are taking the other.
You know, Erin, I was kind of thinking while Heather was talking about this, throughout America's history, we've always had tests and we've had various types of standards. But generally, my recollection is that this was always left to the individual schools or to the district or even at a state level. How has this changed? And can you give us kind of a little bit of a history of how this metamorphosis occurred, that we went from something that we took care of and into something that Big Brother government is going to be taking care of?
It's a good point. You know, with the Constitution, the 10th Amendment leaves education to be a power of the state. It has always been controlled at a state level. Standards have been set by each individual state, and each state has had their own test. This is drastically different. The Common Core Initiative was developed by a group called Achieve.org. It's a nonprofit in Washington, D.C., and it has been funneled through the National Governors Association and the Chief Council of State School Officers to be sort of the state-led part of it. Most people are under the false impression that the Common Core is a state-led effort. And I believe they think that because the National Governors Association and the Chief Council of State School Officers are the forces behind it. But it was written by Achieve.org. The standards, K-12, and English Language Arts and Math are written by Achieve.org. They're not written by state educators, which traditionally they had been. States developed their own standards, and they developed their own tests.
I recall when I was growing up and going to school, we had a test that we had to take, and that was for the state in order to qualify for certain things. When did this phenomenon of the interjection of the federal government occur?
The first time we started seeing state standards was in the early 90s. Goals 2000 was passed, and states were to create a set of state standards that were equal to a set of national standards. And that is when there was a huge grassroots uprising and revolt, so to speak, about the concern about the potential for federal overreach. As I mentioned earlier, the national history standards were the first to be released, and they caused quite a ruckus. So for the last 10 years, states have continued to test to their own state standards, which people felt were more their own. Recently, we've seen a giant leap forward under the Obama administration with the Common Core. Now we have finally reached the point where every state will have the same set of standards, top-down, centrally controlled standards from unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. The dangerous thing is that these standards are owned and copyrighted by private trade associations. No one in your state, not your governor, your superintendent, your legislature, has the power to edit or change these standards.
So how did we get there? I mean, here we're in charge of our own destiny, and all of a sudden now you're telling me that this Common Core is going to turn around, and even though we're implementing it, we're using it, we're having to fund it, and yet we can't change it if we feel that there seems to be some kind of error in it or some kind of misuse of a test in order to maybe skewer something going the wrong way.
Right. Well, the Obama administration came out with Race to the Top funding. It was a $4.3 billion program funded through stimulus funds. And they told the states, if you want to compete for Race to the Top funding, you must adopt the Common Core. You must accept the new federal assessments. You must complete several different requirements, of which Common Core was the main one. So if they didn't adopt Common Core, they would not get as many points in their application to win Race to the Top funds. In addition to that, the No Child Left Behind waivers are also tied to Common Core. As our superintendent in Indiana said, on the application for a waiver, the highly sought after waivers, there is a box you must check. Have you adopted the Common Core standards? Yes. Check.
So if you don't adopt, where does that put you? I mean, are you in default of some kind of a special permission that you'll have from the federal government?
Well, you won't be able to qualify for Race to the Top funding, and you won't be qualified for No Child Left Behind waiver. And a lot of states are anxious to get the No Child Left Behind waivers because they can't meet those requirements. So the federal government, through No Child Left Behind, has certain requirements that states must meet, like proficiency of all students by a certain year. And in order to get a waiver out of that requirement, you must adopt the Common Core and follow the other sections of the Common Core initiative.
But I thought this was standardized, that what had happened with No Child Left Behind, that the states were being opted out of it because of the very fact that nobody liked this thing called No Child Left Behind, that it was an abysmal failure.
It is an abysmal failure, and the Common Core initiative is like No Child Left Behind, but even more intrusive and dictates more of what states can do.
I'd like to add that the American public has been terribly let down. This was done in a deceptive manner in the dark of night with virtually no public debate or even awareness. The decision for most states to sign on was made by their state boards of education. In my home state of Indiana, for example, these are not even elected individuals. They are appointed. And there was very little, virtually no publicity that our state was making such a radical shift and abdicating our control going forward. The advocates of the Common Core learned from their mistakes in the 90s, and they learned that in order to be successful, they had to circumvent the democratic process. When the American public found out in the 90s, as you may recall, there was quite an uprising. So they realized they had to do it quickly and quietly. The stimulus bill of 2009 was just what they needed. Cash-strapped states were in dire need for the $4 billion that was being dangled in front of them. Also, to be eligible for the Race to the Top funds, states had to sign on to the Common Core State Standards Initiative before the standards were even released. Once they were released, they had less than 8 weeks in the middle of the summer to ratify those standards. I've read the minutes for my state's State Board of Education meetings, and it appears they based this decision on virtually no research, nothing more than simply the advocates coming in and giving them a sales pitch. There was no cost analysis mentioned, and I still, to this date, we don't know whether one was done. It is now coming out that the Common Core is going to be very costly. Estimates range from $16 billion nationally. And this is a terrible injustice, an unfunded mandate that was not thought out. Basically, the debate that should have occurred before the decision was made is now occurring belatedly as backlash is occurring all across the country. In at least a dozen states, pushback is occurring.
Now, you painted a pretty dire picture here. Are you saying then that the state legislatures really didn't know what they were signing on for?
Well, you know, it gets back to your first question a little bit about our background. We have children in the same school, and Heather and I went together to fight against the Common Core. We approached our state senator, Scott Schneider, and explained to him the problems that we were having with the Common Core, and he was unaware of it. He actually sits on the Indiana Senate Education Committee and was not aware of it and fought for the voucher bill. And that was interesting because even if you are a private school, Catholic school, charter school, any type of private school, if you receive a voucher, you must follow the Common Core standards, and you must take the new federally funded student test. It is controlling what happens in voucher schools, voucher recipient schools, and the school choice scholarships.
So you're saying for those people that believe that our educational system is not quite up to it's the standards that we feel our children should have, and we send our kids, say, to charter schools or to a parochial school, that we're actually tying back into the regular system, which is going to be the standardized testing, and we're going to be penalized again,
even though we try
to take our kids and put them in a better place?
Yes, it's so funny. It's not funny. It's sad because the school choice initiative is negated by Common Core. Before I go any further, I'd like to jump back and defend Senator Scott Schneider because although he was unaware of the Common Core and its impact on vouchers and private schools and public schools, he did form legislation on our behalf. And he went to ALEC. He received model legislation for states to use to opt out of the Common Core. He took it before the legislative session of 2011, and it was defeated 6-4 in the Senate Education Panel. And he is still trying to form legislation that we will be reintroducing in Indiana in the new 2012 legislative session. It really is the only way to undo the atrocities of the Common Core.
I can see why you're having a problem. He says, I went to the Common Core site just for the heck of it to see what they're saying. And you know, on papers and on the internet, it sounds pretty good. And, you know, they describe it as a clear, consistent understanding of what students are expected to learn. So teachers and parents, and I underline that word parents, know what they need to do to help. What's wrong with that statement? Tell me.
Well, you know, you're getting that statement from people who are supporting the Common Core, and they always use the same talking points. The Common Core standards are fewer, clearer, and deeper, while our old standards were a mile wide and an inch deep. I think I've heard that from every Common Core proponent. They use it over and over again. But in Indiana, Massachusetts, California, and some other states, they were actually judged. In actuality, several states' standards were judged to be the exact opposite of what they're saying. As far as Indiana goes, our standards were judged to be clearer, as far as easier to read by teachers, more rigorous. You know, this whole idea of, well, the old standards were a mile wide and an inch deep, I think is a complete disservice. It's sort of going along the line of, you don't need to over-educate people. Let's just do minimal content knowledge.
And I'd like to add, as you can imagine, in order to get 50 states to all sign on to one set of standards, you have to make sure every special interest group is happy. And certain states had the notion, we don't want it to be too hard. So quickly, you see a lowering of the bar as it becomes really a race to the middle. And what I find very concerning is some of the leading experts in their fields find these to be completely inadequate and subpar and mediocre in their quality. two of the leading experts. Sandra Stotsky is a leading expert on English language arts standards. She served as a member, the only content expert, on the validation committee for the Common Core English Language Arts Standards. She could not sign off on the final product because it was so low. She deems that under the Common Core, in order to graduate, students' reading levels need only be at a seventh grade level. She's also very concerned about the de-emphasis on classical literature and creative literature, which will be replaced with informational texts. Again, on the math validation committee for the Common Core, Dr. Milgram, James Milgram from Stanford, served as the only mathematician, the only content expert. He, too, could not sign off on the final product. He says by the end of eighth grade, our students will be 2 years behind their international counterparts in the highest performing nations. Geometry is required to be taught with an experimental method never used successfully anywhere in the world. It was tried in the former Soviet Union and thrown out as a failure. So while conservatives are concerned, understandably, about federal overreach and the unconstitutionality, there are individuals who got on the validation committee, and I would imagine they did so not having a problem with the idea of national standards. They just wanted them to be good Common Core standards.
And a lot of experts signed on to help with the development of the Common Core and to sit on the validation committee because of the promise that they made. They promised that the Common Core standards would be internationally benchmarked to countries of high-performing students. But the fact is, in the delivery, it's not there. The Common Core websites even had to change their language. They cannot claim them to be internationally benchmarked anymore. They only claim that they referenced the standards of high-performing countries. So I think that also goes back to the state's adoption of them, that they adopted them or agreed to adopt them before they were able to see them. It's because they believed in that promise. You know, the promise that they were going to be internationally benchmarked and that they were going to bring up the quality of education. And for some states, they do because their standards were so lacking. But the promise was never fulfilled.
How is it that these states who originally had tried to come up with the best system possible are allowing this to happen? Because in the past, the United States, being such a large country with diverse areas, different kinds of mini cultures that we have, we were like the breeding ground for if this system wasn't working, then we'd try a different kind of system in another state, and whichever one worked better, we'd kind of pick and choose and all that. And all of a sudden, here we are in the 21st century, and we're going to a system that wants to amalgamate all of that and put it all together and just make one big mess. And is that really the way to go?
Well, no one wants to go that way. And the worst part about the Common Core standards is that they've never been piloted in a classroom, ever.
So there was no testing?
No piloting, no field testing of these standards.
You know, even General Motors tests its car before they bring it out.
I mean, even a state even tests a math textbook before they adopt it into the state school system. So, yeah, it's a problem.
Many people feel that the Common Core will eventually implode by its own weight. The idea of a one-size-fits-all, centrally controlled, top-down system of education for a country the size of America is frankly, in my opinion, ludicrous. So it may very well implode. The sad part is, for many of us, our children will be the losers. My child doesn't get another shot at fifth grade, or third grade, or 10th grade. If this implosion takes a decade or more, my children and all of their peers are the ones that will lose out.
And you just have to look at the history of education to see it. Whole language, fuzzy math, outcome-based education. You know, the Common Core will eventually, we hope, lie in the graveyard buried with all the rest of the failures of the education system.
The question is, how much damage will be done to how many children in the meantime?
In conjunction with that, I have my own little bugaboo, and that bugaboo is called cursive writing. We seem to be losing this ability. Is this one of the skill sets that's going to be completely gone?
You bring up a perfect example. In their infinite wisdom, the educrats who wrote the Common Core at Achieve chose not to include cursive writing. So now many schools are no longer teaching cursive writing. And I think it's sad because, as you well know, many of our historical documents can be read by only being able to read cursive writing. Signatures are required for virtually everything. It's preposterous. And yet it occurred.
Just to be fair, in Indiana, we did add back in cursive writing. While it is true that they are copyrighted, the Common Core standards are copyrighted, and you may not change or edit or delete any standard, states are able to add 15% to the standards. So some states might want to take part of that 15% that they may add and choose to enter cursive writing. But a lot of experts that we've spoken with say that even allowing that 15%, there's only so much time in the day to do 100% of the standards you have to teach, and then you can add that 15% on the end. And in addition, it's not on the new federal test. So how many teachers are going to test the 15% that you add?
In conjunction with that, you know, one of the questions that's normally been bandied around in reference to this is whether this actual whole process is legitimate or constitutional. Common Core standards, you know, they're almost complete. Again, 45 states, 3 territories, and now all of a sudden we're in the midst of it, and it looks like there's almost no turning back. I'd like you to make a statement somewhere on the subject of the legitimacy of this process, whether or not it's, one, legitimate because of the way it's been introduced, and secondly, whether it's actually constitutional. Should the federal government be getting us involved in this?
I would say no. Currently, it violates 3 federal statutes. And as you know, the Constitution of the United States says nowhere in there that it is the role of the federal government to control curriculum or testing or education.
It's almost as if they're paying, because it is constitutionally forbidden for the Department of Education or the federal government to control or develop or fund a national curriculum and a national test. They basically are using the National Governors Association and the CCSSO that I mentioned earlier, who are the main drivers behind it, to do their dirty work for them.
So are you saying they coerced our legislatures,
but our legislators,
into coming in and allowing this?
The adoption process has gone through the normal adoption process. I can speak for my state, Indiana. It did go through the normal adoption process, meaning the State Board of Education adopted the standards. So that's not the part that is unconstitutional. Basically, the federal government has used their coercive things through Race to the Top funding, waivers from No Child Left Behind, basically money to incentivize the states into adopting them.
You mentioned money, but there's one other thing that's been sitting here and biting at me called privacy. Where do we stand on that issue with respect to this, you know, nationalized testing?
We are not in good shape whatsoever. In fact, part of the commitment states had to make in order to be eligible to receive the Race to the Top funding was to create statewide longitudinal databases. And a big portion of this that is very troubling and concerning is the fact that schools will now be collecting data on your child, which is personally identifiable. It is no longer being reported in the aggregate, but it is rather personally identifiable data. And as you probably know, under the Obama administration, they have weakened the FERPA laws. No longer is parental consent or even knowledge required for them to release your students' data.
So you're saying there's going to be like a national database?
Eventually, yes.
That's for all the kids.
That is the national model. The national model.
And they actually put this down in black and white someplace?
Right. Currently, there are 12 points of information that they want on each student that are required under the Common Core Initiative. But the national model calls for 400 points of data. That's the model that they want states to go towards.
Is that the reason?
400 points of data, demographic information, health information, voting status, you know, voting history of family, religious status of parents, what's your income, what does your father make, what does your mother make, how many people in your household have this or that. It's very detail-oriented, and it will be personally identifiable through the assessments.
A portion of this has to do, as I mentioned earlier, with a radical shift to more closely resemble education systems in socialist countries in Europe, where students are tracked at very early ages for certain occupations, and their education is tailored towards what they're being trained for in the workforce. As you know, this is quite different than the American system, which has always been based on a liberal arts education that allows the student to move from whatever occupation they wish. This is very different.
Heather and Aaron, I'd like to thank you both for coming on the show. I was thinking of some way to close, and I think the best way I can close is say thank you and say that you are the voice that hasn't been heard, because most of us don't even know about this Common Core, these national standards. And I think it's exceptionally important for the American citizen, and especially the parent of the student, to be able to understand what's coming up here. You wanted to say one more thing.
I'd like to encourage all of your listeners to please contact your state legislators, contact your governor, contact any elected official in your state, and tell them you would like your state to opt out of the Common Core, the way states like Virginia, Texas, Alaska, pushback is occurring in Utah. And also, please visit the Truth in American Education website for the latest and most up-to-date information about Common Core opposition. It's www.truthinamericaneducation.com.
Fortunately, there is a way out of this, and in our state, Indiana, that way out is Mike Pence. We need his strong leadership, his conservative principles, to reign on his decision to opt Indiana out of the Common Core. It is truly the only way that we can get it done. It has to be done through the state legislators, and it has to be approved by Mike Pence.
There is a lot exciting happening. Grassroots opposition is growing in at least a dozen different states. Pushback is occurring. Utah is just voted to get out of the federal test. Governor McDonnell in Virginia, they got into the Common Core, realized he pulled them out. Virginia and Texas, Governor Perry and Palin had the good sense never to get in the first place. We're hopeful that here in Indiana, if Mike Pence is elected, he will follow and go along and be a leader, a true leader. He's in a perfect position to do so since our standards were rated as one of the top three in the nation. He has a unique opportunity and responsibility to lead the nation on this. So we are very hopeful that this can be turned around.
And I would also like to point out that any American citizen is welcome to come on an episode of America Speaks Out and express their own opinions and ideas about today's topics. The FlyPod Network is a neutral forum, so regardless of your point of view or your political affiliation, it makes no difference to us. Contact us by email right here at the studio, and if you'd like to come on our show, shout at theflypod.com. Well, that's my show for today. From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of www.theflypod.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.